welcome to the reading of the Dubuque Telegraph Herald for Tuesday, March 12, 2024. I'm your reader, Bill Petrosky. In area news headlines, former Dubuque residents claimed a Boy Scouts abuse settlement limited by Iowa law. Story by Nick Juice at thmedia.com. The wooded area behind what is now Mercy One Dubuque Medical Center was once a stomping ground for the youngsters who grew up in the neighborhood. Bill Vall remembers gallivanting along the bluffs, bumming cigarettes, and playing with friends as any kid growing up in the early 1960s would. Life was fun. We just had good times, said Vall, now 71. Dubuque was a great place to grow up. That love for the outdoors and camaraderie led Vall to join local Boy Scout Troop 23 of the Northeast Iowa Council in 1964. Vall excelled. He became a lead scout and took on various leadership roles and meetings. While in many ways he thrived as a scout, Vall was also one of at least 82,000 people in the United States who say they were once sexually abused by a scout volunteer. It's that alleged abuse that led Vall to nearly 60 years of crippling fatigue and health problems that hindered his ability to work and led him to seriously consider ending his life. Vall in 2020 joined a national settlement in hopes of recouping a fraction of his lost wages while also being part of a movement to push for change in the justice system regarding organizational protection of children. I have essentially lost my life, Vall told the Telegraph Herald in an interview. Vall, who now lives in Tucson, Arizona, is working on submitting a packet that documents his story to a Boy Scouts of America trust valued at nearly $2.5 billion. The trust is the product of a federal Boy Scouts of America bankruptcy case and is being dispersed to former scouts with sexual abuse claims as part of the largest sexual abuse settlement in United States history. However, legal hurdles which include Iowa's stringent statute of limitations on civil cases involving sexual abuse victims have Vall and many others questioning how much money they will ultimately receive. Vall became a Boy Scout with Troop 23 in 1964 when he was 11 years old. Vall said an assistant scoutmaster, Kenny Krakow, took a liking to several of the boys in his troop and would take them to events outside normal scouting schedule. It was common for Vall and a couple of other youths to accompany Krakow to events such as dirt track races, canoe trips, and air shows. Vall said, during those prolonged activities, Krakow eventually gained the young Vall's trust enough to persuade him to visit his house, Vall said. At that time, I was unaware I was being groomed, Vall said. All these activities were designed to make me feel greatly indebted to him. I loved the attention, and we had a lot of fun. Vall said Krakow sexually abused him more than a dozen times over several years. The alleged abuse was not talked about among other boys or with troop leadership, Vall said. Kids at the time were told not to question authority. Vall said the alleged abuse went unreported until someone eventually turned in the scoutmaster. It wasn't my parents who did it, said Vall, who didn't report the alleged abuse to his parents. I didn't turn Krakow in. So I knew for a fact there was at least one more victim. A, quote, confidential record sheet from the BSA, dated December 8, 1970, details the resignation of Kenneth Krakow of Dubuque in 1970. The document was among more than 20,000 pages of internal BSA documents, dubbed the, quote, perversion files, dating back to 1944, that were presented to an Oregon jury in 2010 for the first time. The documents detail alleged sexual abuse by BSA leaders. The document with Krakow's name said he resigned due to, quote, many years of homosexual activities with boys in the area and was signed by a Boy Scouts executive. By the time he turned 15, Vall said he told Krakow he wanted the encounters to stop. Krakow did not protest that decision, Vall said. Since Vall's alleged abuse, BSA has implemented a number of protocols meant to better vet individuals put in leadership positions. The BSA has established a National Youth Protection Committee to guide scouting on matters of youth protection policy, transparency, and accountability, BSA told the Telegraph Herald in an emailed statement. We have an extremely rigorous vetting process, said Carl Boba, CEO of the Northwest Iowa Council of BSA, which includes Alan McKee, Clayton, Delaware, and Dubuque counties in Iowa, and Joe Davis County in Illinois. Some of the new protocols called, quote, barriers to abuse include no one-on-one contact between scouts and adults and require a minimum of two trained leaders at every scouting function. We take the safety of the youth extremely seriously, and I applaud our national office for doing things right by the victims, Boba said. We believe them and feel their pain for their suffering. Vall said he felt mentally separated from the abuse said he mentally separated the abuse from the rest of his time as a scout, which he viewed positively. "I have fond memories of the Boy Scouts," Fall said. "In my mind, I was able to separate what happened to me from all the good times. I had fun aside from Kenny Krakow. Krakow died in 1980. Fall said after the abuse ended, he started suffering from health issues. From 15 to age 24, he said he lived an almost normal life, but in the years that followed, his health deteriorated. "At age 24, I became severely sick, which hugely compromised my lifestyle and ability to work, and this lasted until I was about 69 years old," Vall said. "Multiple doctor visits resulted in unsuccessful treatments, including one health professional who suggested Vall essentially be on nonstop bed rest. Nothing worked. Vall said he felt like he had the flu every day. Doctors for years had no answer to what was causing his symptoms. Vall said for a long time he didn't connect the severe fatigue and health struggles to the traumatic experiences of his youth, and so he didn't think it was relevant to mention it to doctors. Then in 2023, a psychiatrist told Vall his childhood abuse might be the root cause of his health issues and diagnosed him with a somatoform disorder, according to the psychiatrist's report, which Vall provided to the TAH. In people with somatoform disorders, the cause is thought to be intolerable psychological conflicts that are displaced into physical complaints, the report said. For some people, trying to wrestle with physical symptoms is a much safer way to address these psychological conflicts than trying to directly confront the conflicts. In recent years and after a heart attack, Vall has found some healing by doing various exercises and hiking the mountain trails around Tucson. As Vall works to overcome his health complications, he is fighting another battle. Vall, an engineer, estimates over his lifetime he lost nearly $2 million in wages due to health issues that limited his ability to work. In an effort to recoup some of that money, he decided to become part of the BSA settlement. He hopes the settlement also will lead to even more protections for kids involved in Boy Scouts and other organizations. He is working with Iowa legislators in an effort to recraft Iowa's statute of limitations for civil cases as they are written now. It would severely limit the amount of compensation Vall and other claimants in the state will receive. Statutes of limitations exist in part to protect evidence and ensure involved parties reach a resolution in a timely manner while also making sure those accused of wrongdoing can form a defense. When figuring for survivors' compensation, the current BSA settlement uses a formula that weighs a variety of factors, such as the level of abuse, whether the victim previously knew their alleged abuser, and state's statutes of limitations regarding civil abuse claims. Since Vall's alleged abuse took place in Iowa, his claim is subject to the state's laws. Iowa's civil statutes of limitations requires childhood survivors of sex abuse, survivors of wrongdoing, sex abuse or otherwise, to file a claim in court by the age of 19. However, the statute does allow claimants to join suits such as one for BSA within 3 years of coming to the realization that their injuries and suffering are related to their alleged abuse. Janet Peterson, a Des Moines Democrat who serves in the Iowa Senate, this year proposed Senate File 2233, a bill that seeks to eliminate the civil statute of limitations for those filing claims for damages suffered from sex abuse, sexual exploitation, and sex trafficking. For the BSA settlement, the bill must pass 1 year after the effective date of the trust or by April 2024. As of now, there is little movement in Des Moines, and the bill did not receive a hearing from a Senate subcommittee. There is still an opportunity to get legislation passed, which would require a leadership bill, Peterson said. The legislature has done that in the past. I have agreement from Democratic leaders who would be supportive of a leadership bill to eliminate the civil statute of limitations. Even if they wanted to narrow the fix just to cases involving bankruptcy, I imagine leadership would be open to that. Peterson said lifting the law would allow more people to come forward and report abuse while also holding large organizations accountable. Opponents of such measures say getting rid of statutes of limitations can create cases that are nearly indefensible. Vall estimates that when all is said and done, due to how the current state law figures into the BSA settlement formula, he will receive between 30 and 40% of what he initially was entitled to as a claimant on the BSA settlement case. It's a number, he says, is, quote, nothing compared to what he has lost. Authorities say a passenger injured when driver loses control doing, quote, donuts in Dubuque County. Authorities said a passenger was injured when a teenage driver lost control while doing donuts in the parking lot of the Dubuque County Fairgrounds. Kaylee M. Huseman, 17, of Dubuque, was transported by ambulance to Unity Point Health Finley Hospital for treatment of her injuries, according to the Dubuque County Sheriff's Department. A report states that Huseman was a passenger in a vehicle driven by Ryan D. Horkheimer, 16, of Dubuque. A report states that Horkheimer was driving recklessly, burning out and doing donuts at approximately 7 p.m. Wednesday in the fairgrounds parking lot when he lost control of his vehicle and rolled over, landing in upright position. He was cited with reckless driving. Area business news. Lancaster Sports Bar under new ownership. Dubuque Lifestyle Clinic. Health Clinic moves. Galena Service Shop opens new facility. Story by Grace Nyland. Grace.Nyland at thmedia.com. BizBuzz shares business tidbits from across the tri-states. This edition highlights developments in Lancaster, Wisconsin, Dubuque, and Galena, Illinois. Dateline, Lancaster, Wisconsin. A longtime employee has taken ownership of a well-known Lancaster sports bar. Danielle Schoenfeld and her husband Brandon recently purchased the Dome Sports Bar, formerly known as Copper Dome Sports Bar, at 126 North Madison Street. The bar offers a variety of alcoholic beverages and pub classics such as burgers, Philly cheesesteaks, and onion rings. It's a good, well-established community hangout spot, Daniel Schoenfeld said. We're wanting to be a welcome place where people feel comfortable to come and meet new people and have a good time. Schoenfeld worked at Copper Dome Sports Bar for 7 years, starting as a bartender and making her way up to manager. When the business went up for sale, she knew she wanted to stick around, but wasn't sure if she wanted to make the jump to full ownership. Her husband was the one to eventually convince her to take the leap, she said, and the couple have now owned the bar for about a month. He convinced me, all right, Schoenfeld said. We already have just a few girls who work here, and they've all stayed here with me. We're a tight-knit bunch, so we're able to work together well and help each other out. Schoenfeld said she doesn't have any major changes planned for the bar, but she does plan to expand the menu. Many of the fan favorites will stick around, such as Philly cheesesteaks and, quote, dome burgers, but Schoenfeld also plans to add in rotating specials to keep things interesting. She also hopes to open the bar for lunch once the necessary staffing is arranged. For now, the Dome Sports Star Bar is open 2 p.m. to close Tuesday through Thursday and 11 a.m. through close Friday, Saturday, and Sunday. The kitchen closes at 9:30 p.m. More information about the bar and a full menu are available online at facebook.com/thedomelancaster. Dubuque Lifestyle Health Clinic moves into larger space. A Dubuque health clinic focused on lifestyle medicine is relocated to meet its growing customer demand. Lifestyle Health and Wellness recently moved to a new location at 4855 Asbury Road, Suite 7. The clinic, owned and operated by Christy DeWar, focuses on identifying and modifying lifestyle habits to improve overall health. Lifestyle medicine is about finding those habits that are best individualized for you and your concern, explained DeWar, a nurse practitioner. Then we identify those goals and make a game plan for how we can help you get there. DeWar opened Lifestyle Health and Wellness 2 years ago, and the business previously operated at 998 Fremont Avenue. As demand grew, however, she said it became clear additional space would be needed to better serve current and future clients. The new location is larger, DeWar explained, and has enough room to accommodate additional staff. Soon she plans to bring on a dedicated health coach to further assist in meeting clients' needs. DeWar is also accepting new clients at a new space. Already, the clinic offers coaching, weight loss services, nutrient injections, and certain lab draws. There's also a small retail area for dietary supplements, protein powders, educational materials, and more. I'm looking forward to helping my clients as best I can in this new space with all the resources that I can now bring in, DeWar said. Our services work really well with traditional medicine because they add in those lifestyle components that often underlie a certain condition or concern. Lifestyle Health and Wellness is open noon to 6 p.m., Monday and Wednesday, 7 a.m. to 1 p.m., Tuesday and Thursday, and 8:30 a.m. to 1:30 p.m. on Friday. Current and new clients can contact the new location at 563-845-3321 or online at lifestylewellnessdbq.com. Family Truck Repair Business opens new Galena facility. A longtime family business is located at its Galena operations. Guy's Towing and Service Incorporated recently opened its new 21,000 square foot building at 11501 A.J. Harrell Drive. The shop focuses on providing maintenance and towing services for heavy duty trucks, trailers, and other large machinery. The shop replaces the former location at 11380 Dandar Street, which now is used for large equipment storage. We just outgrew the old building, said co-owner Ben Richard, We've been planning the move for about 2 years, and now we're ready to settle in. Richard's parents opened Guy's Truck and Tractor Service in 1977 in Keeler, Wisconsin, and opened Guy's Towing and Service in Galena in 2006. Both continue to operate under the ownership of Richard and his brothers, Aaron and Ryan Richard. Ben Richard worked solo at the Galena location for a few years after technical school, but the team slowly started to grow as demand for the shop services rose. The company's technicians specialize in heavy truck and trailer repair, and services include preventive and roadside maintenance, trailer services, and heavy-duty towing and recovery. We're looking forward to seeing our efficiency go up with this new space in terms of getting trucks in and out of the shop, quicker, Richard said. We moved here with that goal in mind, as well as building enough room to continue to grow. Another goal with the new location is to expand staffing using the updated and expanded facilities, not only as an improvement for clients, but also as a recruiting tool for future technicians, Richard said. Technicians are tight across the tri-state area and beyond, due in part to the increasing complexity of diesel engines and heavy machinery, Richard said. We kind of took an if we build it, they will come approach with getting this new facility up and running, Richard said. The heavy truck diesel repair world is in dire need of technicians to do the work, and we're hoping this new facility will help us attract them to work here. Guy's Towing and Service is open 7 a.m. to 5 p.m. Monday through Friday and 8 a.m. to noon Saturday. The new facility can be reached at 815-777-3257 or by email at benr@guystruck.com. Business tip sought. Do you have an interesting story idea or news tip to share about a local business? Ideas can be shared with business reporter Grace Nyland at grace.nyland, that's N-I-E-L-A-N-D, at tastemedia.com or by calling her at 563-588-5647. Platteville Library to host paper shredding drop-off site. Dateline Platteville, Wisconsin. Platteville Public Library will provide a dress shredding drop-off site in collaboration with Southwest Opportunity Center. The site will be open to the public from April 23rd to May 4th at the library. 225 West Main Street. The site will not be available April 28th. People can bring up to 2 grocery bags or 1 banker's box for papers for destruction. The free event is meant to help people dispose of private documents safely. A secure container will be available at the site to keep documents safe and confidential until destruction. Visit PlatteVillePublicLibrary.org for more information. Dubuque County officials, upcoming state tax letter complicated. Story by Benjamin Fisher at thmedia.com. All Iowa property owners soon will receive a property tax letter required of counties thanks to changes made to this tax system in 2023 by the Iowa legislature. But local government officials say the form is complicated and doubt it will provide taxpayers any clarity. The form details tax levies, total revenues, and expenditures of each taxing entity per county. The form will also announce future public hearings on both the tax levy and budgets for each taxing authority in whose jurisdiction the property lies. As previously reported, the Dubuque County Board of Supervisors has supported a budget for fiscal year 2025 with a countywide property tax levy of $9.21 per $1,000 of taxable property value, $5.62 for all residential properties, plus $3.59 for those outside of cities, just as it is currently. The county expects that to total $35.6 million property tax revenue, which with other revenues will provide $67.5 million in total revenues. The county's expenditures are projected to be $80.6 million and expects to use about $13 million from reserves. The letter property owners will receive, as developed by the state of Iowa, will be a detailed accounting of much of that information. These are the Iowa Department of Management's forms, County Budget Director Stella Rundy told the Dubuque County Supervisors at their Monday meeting. Everything we've worked on for the last series of months gets condensed into about 14 pages. But according to Dubuque County Auditor Kevin Dragato, this first year's letter format likely will provide more clarity to the state government than to taxpayers. It's not tailored to each parcel, he said, so it's not going to tell the owner, here's the amount of money that's proposed that you would pay in taxes. It's going to give them all the data and give them a bunch of math formulas. Then they are going to have to get out a calculator and do the work themselves to figure out what their tax obligation will be. Drogado said he expects some challenges due to the way the state's taxpayer information statement has been organized, as well as the county having to send said letters to every individual owner of every property. Recommended for you. We've been doing some maintenance on our end to reduce the number of letters that we have to send out, he said. But each individual owner of a parcel, if the parcel has 12 individual owners, for instance, are to receive this statement. Additionally, if a person owns multiple properties, they will receive a letter for each property. We foresee the Postal Service in the state of Iowa receiving 2 million pieces on the same day. That will put a large burden on the postal system to get these out to people on time. We foresee a lot of calls being generated to the auditor's office, the assessor's office, and probably the treasurer's office. Supervisors shared Dragato's concerns. You're going to mail this out, said Supervisor Harley Potoff. People are going to look at it and think, what is it? And our phones are going to be ringing. The letter also will notify property owners of each taxing entity's public hearing. For instance, the Board of Supervisors is scheduled at Dubuque County's for 11 a.m. on April 1, but it is each taxing authority, school boards, city councils, etc. that can answer questions or collect input on their individual levy and budget. The Board of Supervisors, for example, has no control over the city of Dubuque's budget or Western Dubuque Community Schools' levy or budget. Supervisor Ann McDonough said she was concerned the letter would not explain the uses and sources of government funds in a way that taxpayers will understand. For example, the 2023 change to state property taxes requiring the letters also restricted Dubuque County's maximum levy rate for the upcoming fiscal year via caps on allowable revenue growth from skyrocketing property value assessments. The law's requirements of these letters will also cost the county tens of thousands of dollars to send them out, an estimated $47,000 just for Dubuque County. Both of those required the Board of Supervisors and staff to look at other revenue streams or pushing off projects for the year, but neither will be identifiable in the state formatted letters. We're spending $13 million of our fund balances in the budget, McDonough said, and 20% of that is the Biden administration's American Rescue Plan Act allocation of federal money, $2.6 million. So 20% of the money we're using to make this work is coming from the federal government. The state goes in a direction and we go in another, in part because our narrative is storytelling and their narrative is just filling in their department of management form. Then they don't see how those things connect, I don't think, because it's not really illustrated in the forms. They're collapsing things together that don't make sense for the way counties do business. Taxing authorities are required to submit their proposed maximum tax levies to the county governments by 4 p.m. Thursday so that property owners receive their letters ahead of the taxing authorities' public hearings. Drogado said he expects Dubuque County taxpayers to receive their letters within 5 days to spare before the county's April 1 hearing. Here's a column that says, ask the TH, what are the laws regarding stop delivery vehicles? What about smoke exhaust and noise from cars? This story is by Michelle London, michelle.london at tishmedia.com. Question, what are the rules of the road for delivery vehicles in the city of Dubuque? I've seen drivers for major delivery companies stop in the lane of traffic, get out, and deliver a package. Shouldn't they have to park along the curb like everyone else? Answer, Dubuque City Code does allow for vehicles such as UPS, FedEx, and Amazon to stop in the travel portion of the roadway to make deliveries, said Lieutenant Luke Bach, Public Information Officer for the Dubuque Police Department. But there are limits. They're only allowed to do so for 15 minutes, he said. The city ordinance allows for delivery vehicles and other commercial vehicles, such as a truck delivering furniture or other freight, to stop in a two-lane travel lane on a two-way street while they are loading or unloading, as long as they provide a 10-foot width of the road, such as other lane of traffic, for traffic to get around the commercial vehicle. The same applies for a one-way street. Question, what is Dubuque City ordinance for modifying exhaust systems? I've noticed an increase in the noise level and smoke output of the exhaust systems on some cars. How is this enforced by the police department? Answer, Lieutenant Bach said that according to the Dubuque City Code, all motor vehicles traveling within the city must be equipped with a muffler and good working order to prevent, quote, excessive noise and annoying smoke. Prima facie violations include the use of a muffler cutout, bypass, or similar device, equipment marked for off-road use and not for street use, excessive revving and or acceleration, which can be heard at a distance of about at least 200 feet from the vehicle, or any excessive noise that is audible at least 200 feet from the vehicle. Prima facie literally means at first sight, Bach said. This basically means that the things listed would be sufficient evidence to establish a violation when the officer witnesses it. As far as annoying smoke, that is really up to the officer's discretion. These violations, like most traffic enforcement, are primarily enforced by the Dubuque Police Department's Patrol Division. Box said traffic violations are addressed by patrol officers when they're observed while on routine patrol and or when officers have time to dedicate specifically to traffic enforcement efforts. Need an answer? Submit a question to telegraphherald.com/forms/ask_the_th via email or via email to michelle.lennon@thmedia.com or by calling her at 563-588-5655. Beatles versus Stones tribute band battle to be held at Five Flags Center. A pair of tribute bands appearing this summer in Dubuque will attempt to settle an argument. Which band was better, the Beatles or the Rolling Stones? A Beatles tribute act and a Rolling Stones tribute band each will perform during Beatles vs. Stones, a musical showdown held at 8 p.m. June 22nd at Five Flags Theater, according to a press release from the venue. Tickets are on sale beginning at 10 a.m. Friday, March 15th at the Five Flags box office or online at Ticketmaster.com. Pair of popular rock bands to headline Dubuque casino concerts this summer. A pair of popular rock bands will perform this summer at Dubuque Casino. Warrant will perform June 1 at Q Casino's Backwater Stage, and I Prevail will take the stage July 12. Warrant, a glam metal band formed in 1984, but really began to hit its stride with the release of its 89-hit single, Heaven, which hit number 2 on Billboard Hot 100. Two of the band's other popular songs, Cherry Pie and I Saw Red, both cracked the top 10 in early 90s. The band will be joined in Dubuque by special guests Lita Ford and Firehouse. Ford is a founding member of the Runaways, an all-female rock group formed in 1975 with popular hits such as Cherry Bomb and Queens of Noise. Firehouse is an American rock band known for its heavy metal sound. The group has released 8 albums over the past 34 years and produced several gold, platinum, and multi-platinum records. I Prevail, formed in 2013 and 2014, released its EP, Heart vs. Mind. The group further gained popularity with the 2014 release of a metal cover of Taylor Swift's Blank Space that peaked at number 9 on the Billboard Hot Rock Song Chart. The band has since released 3 audio life albums, Lifelines, True Power, and Trauma, which in 2020 received a Grammy nomination for Best Rock Album. I Prevail, singles Hurricane and Bad Things topped Billboard's Mainstream Rock Airplay chart, while the single Bow Down received a Grammy nomination for Best Metal Performance. The group will be joined on stage by Hollywood Undead, an American rap rock band known for albums including Swan Songs, Day of the Dead, and Hotel California. Tickets for both performances go on sale at 10 a.m. Friday, March 15th at backwaterstage.com. General admission tickets cost $59.99 and tailgate tickets are $69.99. Doors for open for both shows at 6:30 p.m. and the concerts begin at 8 p.m. Here's a look at local law enforcement reports. The Dubuque Police and Dubuque County Sheriff's Department reported the following. Richard J. Peterson, 56 of 2322 Jackson Street, was arrested at 2:15 a.m. Monday at his residence on a charge of domestic assault with injury. MFC to host annual celebration of African culture. Area residents are invited to attend a free event next month at Dubuque's Multicultural Family Center to celebrate African culture. The 9th annual Celebrate Africa and the Diaspora event will be held from noon to 3 p.m. April 13th at the Center, 1157 Central Avenue. The event will feature music, dancing, educational displays, fashion show, resource booths, and a sampling of African food. It is a collaboration between the Center, University of Dubuque, Clark University, and Loras College. The event is free and open to the public, and no registration is required. For additional information, visit mfcdbq.org or email info@mfcdbq.org. You are listening to the reading of the Dubuque Telegraph Herald on Tuesday, March 12, 2024, on IRIS, the Iowa Radio Reading Information Service for the Blind. Now let's turn to today's obituaries. Rita M. Hafkemeyer, Dateline Sherrill, Iowa. Rita K. M. Hefkemeyer, age 90, of Sherrill, passed away at 8:08 p.m. on Thursday, March 7, 2024, surrounded by her family at Unity Point Health Finley Hospital. To honor Rita's life, family and friends may visit from 3 p.m. to 7 p.m. on Friday, March 15, 2024, at St. Peter's and Paul's Church, 5131 Sherrill Road. There will also be visitation from 9 a.m. until 10:15 a.m. or on Saturday, March 16th. The Mass of Christian Burial will begin at 10:30 a.m. at St. Peter's and Paul Church with Reverend Tyler Raymond officiating. Burial will be in St. Peter's and Paul Cemetery. Bear Funeral Home is assisting Rita's family. Rita was born September 7, 1933 in Lansing, Iowa, the daughter of John and Leona Kelleher Weber. She graduated from high school and on May 1953 married the love of her life, John Jack Hefkemeyer. They were blessed with four children and 51 years of marriage before Jack died on September 10, 2004. She was an excellent wife and mom who also devoted 26 years to her career at Schluter Insurance as an agent. Her faith was an important aspect of her life as evidenced by her longtime membership at St. Peter and Paul Church. She was a member of the Rosary Society and volunteered countless hours helping out with church functions. She also volunteered with the Dubuque Arboretum and SHIP program through Finley Hospital. She loved the beauty of nature and caring for her garden, and all of her flowers brought great joy. In their younger years, Rita and Jack had a cottage in Buny and spent lots of time on the river. Family was always her main focus, and she loved spending time with everyone as often as possible. Rita had 90 wonderful years here on earth. They weren't always easy, but she took each day in stride with a positive attitude and trust that God had a plan. She was deeply loved and will be missed greatly. Those left to cherish her memory include her children, grandchildren, and other relatives. She was preceded in death by her parents, her husband, John Jack Hefkemeyer, and her brother-in-law, Bill Welsh. Rita's family would like to thank her special angels, Deb and Jerry Finkenauer, Doris and Roger LaBarge, and Harry and Susie Heffel for all their love, friendship, and support. Also, a special thanks to the Sherrill Fire Department and nurses and staff at Unity Point Health Finley Hospital for the kindness and assistance. Family will thankfully receive your support through greeting cards and memorials in Rita's memory, which may be mailed to the Bear Funeral Home, 1491 Main Street, Dubuque, Iowa. Attention Rita Hefkemeyer family. Online condolences may be left for the family at www.bearfuneralhome.com. Philip D. Hogan, Aline, Nuvana, Iowa. Philip Daniel Hogan, 79, passed away after a battle with Alzheimer's on March 5, 2024, at the Edgewood Convalescent Home in Edgewood, Iowa. Visitation will be from 8 a.m. to 10 a.m. Saturday, March 9th at St. Patrick Parish Center in Colesburg, Iowa. Funeral services will follow at noon at St. Patrick Catholic Church in Colesburg, with burial in St. Patrick Cemetery. Reverend John Hogan will officiate. Phil was born October 9, 1944 in Dyersville, Iowa, to Ray and Hilda Brueggemann Hogan, and grew up on the family farm southeast of Colesburg. He married Deanna Thine on July 13, 1968 in Garneville, Iowa, and continued farming with his father, eventually buying the family farm. Four children were born to this union. They milked cows and raised hogs for almost 50 years on the farm that was settled by his great-grandfather in 1845. He was very proud to receive the Sesquicentennial and Heritage Farm Awards from the state of Iowa. Phil loved to socialize with family and friends, play cards, go to vintage card shows, and Sunday drives. His family remembers how he loved giving his kids rides on his Kawasaki motorcycle, later switching to a four-wheeler for his grandkids. After retirement, Phil and Deanna were fortunate to take several trips through the bank and to visit family, most recently spending Thanksgiving week with the entire family in Florida. Survivors include his loving wife of 55 years, Deanna, four children, Brian Carey Hogan of Olathe, Kansas, Lisa Ron Honeyman of Lenexa, Kansas, Doug Megan Hogan of Ann Arbor, Michigan, and Christina Andy Hogue of Springville, nine grandchildren and other relatives and family members. He was preceded in death by his parents, Ray and Hilda Hogan, and other relatives. Memorials may be directed to the St. Patrick Cemetery Association. The family would like to thank the staff at Finley Hospital, Edgewood Convalescent Home, and Above and Beyond Hospice for the wonderful care provided to Phil in his final days. Kramer Funeral Home in Dyersville assisting the family, and information is available at www.kramerfuneral.com. Memorials may be sent to the family in care of Kramer Funeral Home, 750 12th Avenue Southwest, Dyersville, Iowa, 52040. Terry J. Meyer, Dateline Dyersville, Iowa, Terry J. Meyer, 59, of Dyersville, passed away Thursday, March 7th, as a result of an automobile accident east of Earlville. Visitation will be from 2 to 8 p.m. Sunday, March 17th, at the Kramer Funeral Home in Dyersville. Visitation will continue at the funeral home from 9 to 10 a.m. Monday prior to funeral mass. Mass of Christian burial will be held at 10:30 a.m. Monday at St. Francis Xavier Basilica with burial in Church Cemetery. Reverend Chris Podchaski will officiate. Terry was born June 27, 1964 in Dubuque, the son of Loris and Dorothy Barth Meyer. He married Vicki Selner on April 16, 1988 in Dyersville. Terry's real passion was farming, although he worked at Dyersville Sales Company for about 15 years, Farmer Shipping for about 20 years, and transitioned to IMCO as a machinist. In whatever spare time he could muster, he loved fishing, hunting, spending time with his grandchildren. He could fix almost everything, and was especially talented at woodworking. Survivors include his wife, children, Dr. Wife Vicki, children, Dr. Daniel Samantha Meyer of Dyersville, and Michael Ashley Meyer of Anamosa, grandchildren, and other relatives. He was succeeded in death by his parents and other relatives. Kramer Funeral Home in Dyersville assisting the family, and information is available at www.kramerfuneral.com. Memorials may be sent to the family care of Kramer Funeral Home, 750 12th Avenue Southwest, Dyersville, Iowa, 52040. Stephen J. Shields, Dateline Luxembourg, Iowa. Stephen Butch J. Shields, 64, of Luxembourg, Iowa, passed away Wednesday, March 6, 2024, at Guttenberg Municipal Hospital in Guttenberg. Visitation will be from 3 to 7 p.m. on Thursday, March 14th, at Kramer Funeral Home in Dyersville. Visitation will continue at Kramer Funeral Home from 9 to 9:45 a.m. prior to the funeral mass. Funeral services will be held at 10:30 a.m. on Friday, March 15th, at Holy Trinity Catholic Church with burial at a later date in the church cemetery. Reverend Tyler Raymond will officiate. Butch was born March 19, 1959 in Dubuque, the son of Elmer and Germaine Stephens Schultz. He enjoyed his coveted Corvette and snowmobiling with Gary and friends. He especially enjoyed fishing trips to Lake of the Woods in Canada with friends and family. He was actively involved with Schultz construction for over 40 years. Survivors include his father, Elmer, siblings Gary of Luxembourg, Jean Creamer of Dyersville, Patricia, Kevin Ferricks of Dyersville, nieces and nephews, and other relatives. He was preceded in death by his mother, Germaine, and brother-in-law, Jim Kramer. Kramer Funeral Home in Dyersville is assisting the family, and information is available at www.kramerfuneral.com. Memorials may be sent to the family in care of Kramer Funeral Home, 750 12th Avenue Southwest, Dyersville, Iowa, 52040. Craig W. Birkin, Bellevue, Iowa. Craig W. Birkin, 63, of Bellevue, died Saturday, March 9th. A vigil service will be held at 3:30 p.m. Wednesday at St. Joseph's Catholic Church in Bellevue, where a visitation will follow until 7 p.m. Additional visitation will be held from 9 to 10 a.m. Thursday, March 13th at Hockman Meyer Funeral Home in Bellevue. Services will be at 10:30 a.m. Thursday at the church. David F. Shilgen, Dubuque, Cuba City, Iowa. David F. Shilgren, 39, of Cuba City, died Thursday, March 7th. Visitation will be from 3 to 7 p.m. Thursday and from 10 to 11 a.m. Friday, March 15th, at St. Clement Catholic Church in Lancaster, where Mass of Christian burial will follow. Private burial will take place in the church cemetery. Martin Schwartz Funeral Home of Lancaster is assisting the family. Michael J. Barner, Sr. Michael J. Barner, Sr., 62, of Dubuque, died Saturday, March 9th. Private services will be held Hoffman Snyder and Kitchen Funeral Home and Cremation Service, 3860 Asbury Road, is assisting the family. Betty M. Johanning Meyer, Dateline McGregor, Iowa. Betty M. Johanning Meyer, 93, of McGregor, died Sunday. A celebration of life will be held at a later date at Leonard Grau Funeral Home of Monona is assisting the family. Todd M. Shellhorn, 52, of Galena, Illinois, died Saturday, March 9th. A celebration of life will be held at noon Thursday, March 14th at Furlong Funeral Chapel in Galena. Judy A. Esser, 83, of Dubuque, died Sunday, March 10th. Private services will be held Leonard Funeral Home and Crematory, 2595 Rockdale Road, is assisting the family. Jack D. D. Olinger, East Dubuque, Illinois. Jack D. Olinger, 78, of East Dubuque, Illinois, died Saturday, March 9, 2024. A celebration of life will be held at a later date. Craig W. Birkin, 63, of Bellevue, died Saturday. Vigil service will be held at 3:30 p.m. Wednesday, March 13th at St. Joseph's Catholic Church in Bellevue, where visitation will follow until 7 p.m. Additional visitation will take place from 9 to 10 a.m. Thursday at Hockmer and Meyer Funeral Home in Bellevue. Services will be held at 10:30 a.m. Thursday at the church. Here is a look at area funeral services. Thomas R. Anthony, Greeley, Iowa. Visitation 10 to 11 a.m. Saturday, March 16th. Tri-State Community Church, Dubuque. Memorial service 11 a.m. Saturday at the church. Stanley W. Backenheller, Elizabeth, Illinois. Celebration of life 11 a.m. to 2 p.m. Saturday, March 16th. Woodbine Bend Country Club, Stockton. Shirley A. Chapman, Dubuque. Massive Christian burial 10:30 a.m. today, St. Raphael Cathedral. Barbara Cook, Dubuque, visitation noon to 3 p.m. Saturday, March 16th, Eaglehoff, Sigurd, and Casper Funeral Home, 2659 John F. Kennedy Road, service 3 p.m. Saturday at the funeral home. Donald Digman, Hopkinton, Iowa, vigil service 4 p.m. today, St. Luke Catholic Church, Hopkinton, visitation 4 to 7 p.m. today, and from 9 to 10 a.m. Tuesday, March 12th at the church. Minister Christian burial, 10 a.m. Tuesday at the church. Thomas R. Anthony, Greeley, Iowa, visitation 10 to 11 a.m. Saturday, March 16th, Tri-State Community Church, Dubuque, memorial service 11 a.m. Saturday at the church. Thomas D. G. Duddock, Dubuque, visitation 2 to 7 p.m. today, Hoffman Schneider Kitchen Funeral Home and Crematory, 3860 Asbury Road, service 10 a.m. Wednesday, March 13th at the funeral home. Here's a look at area crime news. Man sentenced to probation for threats against local child support office. An Iowa man has been sentenced to 5 years of probation after making threats against a Dubuque child support recovery office. Zachary L. Shepard, 38, of Clinton, Iowa, recently received the sentence from Iowa District Court Judge Michael Schubert in an Iowa District Court of Dubuque County after pleading guilty to a charge of making a threat of terrorism. If he violates the terms of probation, he faces up to 5 years in prison. Court documents state that Shepard in November left 3 voicemails with the Iowa Department of Health and Human Services Child Support Recovery Office Dubuque after the office put a $700 hold on his bank account for failure to pay child support. Shepard's voicemails, all received within 1 hour of each other, contain several threatening messages against the office. Document states including threats to go quote postal and to kill quote as many people as he could. Reached by Dubuque officers by phone, Shepard said he was very upset about his money and wanted it back. Documents state. Woman sentenced to probation for Dubuque identity theft. A woman has been sentenced to 2 years of probation for a role in a Dubuque identity theft scam. Kendrea S. Henderson, 27, of Chicago, recently received a sentence from Iowa District Court Judge Margaret Lynn Green in Iowa District Court of Dubuque County after pleading guilty to charges of 2 counts of identity theft resulting in a loss of over $1,500. If she violates the terms of her probation, she faces up to 5 years in prison. Court documents state that Dubuque police were called April 4th by a woman who reported being the victim of identity theft. The woman told police she received a bill from Verizon Wireless the day before for $768.73, although she does not have an account with Verizon. The woman told police she called Verizon and learned someone had opened at least 4 phone lines in her name at Best Buy, documents state. Police met with a Best Buy employee who found 4 iPhones purchased on March 28th in the woman's name, totaling $4,700. A Best Buy employee later called Dubuque police to report finding video surveillance footage of the March 28th purchase. Police went to Best Buy and identified the woman as Henderson, documents state. When contacted, Henderson confirmed to police she had bought the iPhones on March 28th, claiming to be, quote, an authorized user on the account, documents state. An officer started asking Henderson questions, at which time she declared, "Let's just get this over with. It's identity theft," documents state. Henderson told officers she had a contact in Chicago who makes fake IDs using real individuals' information and then sends people out to different cities to carry out these thefts, documents state. Woman sentenced for leading Dubuque officers on chase. An Iowa woman has been sentenced to 1 month in jail and 2 to 5 years of probation for leading officers on a high-speed chase in Dubuque. Sierra M. Chance, 24, of Solon, recently received the sentence in Iowa District Court of Dubuque County after pleading guilty charges of eluding, neglect, or abandonment of a bent person and operating while intoxicated. Per a plea deal approved by Iowa District Court Judge Monica Zerini Ackley, charges of driving while impaired, interference with official acts, and possession of marijuana were dismissed. Court document states an officer responded to an area of 14th Street and Central Avenue at about 7:45 a.m. p.m. May 18th for a report of a woman driving while impaired. The officer reports the vehicle and saw the driver, later identified as Chance, had, quote, slow and lethargic movements, documents state. Chance began to back the vehicle away in a chase ensued in which the patrol vehicle reached a speed of 50 miles per hour in a 25-mile-an-hour zone, documents state. The pursuit was eventually terminated, but the vehicle later located occupied on unoccupied on Kika Street. Documents state that witnesses report a woman carrying a child running away from the area. Chance was located in the backyard of a residence at 2700 block of Oakhurst Drive, including holding her one-year-old child. It was determined the child was in the back seat of Chance's vehicle during the pursuit, documents state. In other area news, City of Dubuque seeking grant for second round of Comiskey Park renovations. Story by Maya Bond at thmedia.com. City of Dubuque officials are pursuing nearly $2 million in grant funding to complete additional renovations at a popular park sooner than anticipated. Dubuque City Council members recently approved the application for a $1.97 million National Park Service Outdoor Recreation Legacy Partnership grant to help fund the second phase renovations at Comiskey Park after the first round of work was completed last summer. Planned renovations include construction of two full-size basketball courts, more picnic areas, trails, a new park entryway, and a 53-stall parking lot, along with additional landscaping and trees. The city also plans to replace an older basketball court, skate spot, and tennis court with a multi-use playing field. City officials used a grant from the same program to help fund the first phase of the Comiskey Park project, but such funds were not initially available for Phase 2 because the program could not be used for the same property twice. However, that rule was later removed, according to Dubuque Director of Leisure Services Marie Ware, meaning the city can apply again. The latest grant requires matching funds, which would come from $1.7 million in fiscal year 2026 capital funding and $276,850 in fiscal year 2024 and 2025 Dubuque or Community Development Block Grant dollars. The city is expected to learn if it received the grant in November 2025, and the renovations would be completed by July 2027. If the city does not receive the grant, officials would seek other funding sources. Worsted plans for the next round of work include a new entryway at the corner of 25th and Jackson Streets, mirroring the entrance at 24th and Jackson Street. She said the additional parking stalls will alleviate any potential problems with street parking as the park attracts more visitors. The reason why that parking lot is so important is so many people in that neighborhood do not have garages. She said, we don't want to create a parking problem in the neighborhood. Plans call for 8 new shaded structures and more pedestrian lighting throughout the park and turning the current parking lot into a picnic area. City also seeks to add more seating, particularly at the basketball courts for those resting or watching a game. City plans to plant 54 new trees, adding to the 15 currently in the park. Worsted officials are focused on rebuilding the previously robust tree canopy in the area that was decimated by emerald ash borers, beetles responsible for the deaths of millions of ash trees in the U.S. The neighborhood was devastated by emerald ash borers. She said, we had to remove so many trees from the neighborhood, so just an example. Jackson Street used to be a tree-lined street with trees lining all along Comiskey Park. Only one tree is remaining because all the rest have died. The planned work constitutes the second half of the city's reimagined Comiskey Park master plan, which outlines improvements the community would like to see at the park. The plan was advised after an extensive community engagement process that included input from stakeholders such as area residents, neighborhood associations, community schools, youth organizations, and nonprofits. The first phase of improvements opened to the public in June 2023 and featured $2.46 million in renovations such as the addition of a splash pad, basketball courts, playground, walkways, seating, picnic shelters, bike racks, and landscaping. Mayor Brad Kavanaugh said city officials expected to have to wait longer to find funding for the second phase of renovations, but when the grant opportunity came up, they wanted to jump on it. One of the things I really appreciate about our staff is they're always on top of these federal grants and state grants that can be possibilities like this and provide opportunities where we might not have had them otherwise, he said. He noted that Comiskey is an older park located in the census tract with higher than average poverty rate and a large population of families with young kids, making it a city priority to provide a better place for residents to be outside. Council member Denny Danny Sprank, whose ward includes Comiskey Park, said many residents have felt the North End neighborhood was being left behind and the city needs to continue investing in the area with projects such as the park renovation. He said the basketball courts, walking trails, and dozens of trees are particularly important additions. In 5 to 10 years, the tree canopy of the park will look completely different, he said. Maya Bond, who wrote this story, is a Report for America Corps member. Love That Lasts. Tough times, good times, forgiveness mark the couples. Dubuque couples, 51 years. Story by Michelle London at thmedia.com. Dwayne Schuler wasn't happy when his parents decided to leave Dubuque and buy a farm in the far-off land of Piazda, Iowa, in the spring of 1967. There were no cell phones, Dwayne, now 71, said. I didn't have a driver's license or a car. I lost touch with all my friends. I might as well have been 1,000 miles away. Riding on the bus, the first day of his sophomore year at Western Dubuque High School, Dwayne was a little nervous. When Margie Brown, who lived on a farm a mile down the road from Schuler's, got on the bus with all of her brothers and sisters, he got even more anxious. But then Jerry Holmes Brown, one of Margie's older brothers, decided to chat up the new kid. He came up and introduced himself and said he was going to show me around the school. Little did I know that he was this great basketball player and everybody knew Holmes. Dwayne became part of Holmes' social group, which turned out to be a good thing. Holmes took care of him, guided him around the school, said that now Margie Schuler, 70, and then we just welcomed him into our group. Later, after receiving a Dear John letter from his Dubuque girlfriend, Dwayne made no secret on the school bus of how unhappy he was. Margie thought this was her chance. I liked him for a while, so I sent him a little love note. Dwayne and Margie's first date was a dance at the high school. One night before the dance, Margie and Holmes were sitting at the kitchen table talking. My brother is a comedian, and he told me, well, you can never marry that guy. He's shorter than you. He'll have to jump to give you a kiss. When Dwayne brought Margie home from the dance a few nights later, Holmes had put a wooden box on the front steps in case Dwayne needed assistance in the height department. After a while, Dwayne proposed at a local lover's lane off of Sundown Rose, painting a flat tire and going to the back of the car where he put the engagement ring in the trunk. The couple married March 24, 1972 at Holy Family Church in New Mallory. They will celebrate their 52nd anniversary in a few weeks. They have 4 children, Chad, Cam, Brett, and Amber Gassman. The first son, Corey, tragically died from SIDS at 2.5 months old. They also have 13 grandchildren and 2 great-granddaughters. They raised their family on Rockdale Road in Key West, Iowa, and moved 18 years ago to an 8-acre property near Swiss Valley. When they married, Margie worked at Frommel Industries, which would become Right Height, and Dwayne had just gotten hired at John Deere. Dwayne said it took some time after Corey passed away for the couple to decide if they even wanted more children. We were so young, he said. It was devastating, and we had a lot of late-night talks about whether we wanted to try again because we couldn't go through that again. Once they decided to take a leap and try again, Margie left her job to be a stay-at-home mom. She returned to Right Height once the kids were older and retired in 2020 after 37 years as an industrial sewing machine operator. Dwayne, who worked his way up to experimental mechanic at John Deere, retired in 2011. Chad of Wilton, Wisconsin, remembers a traditional family that went through some tough times. We were blue-collar growing up in the south end of Dubuque, he said. It was a very simple life. We had our values and we did a lot of things together. Brett of Dubuque, said Dwayne, often brought flowers for both Margie and his mom, Brett's grandmother. He would just do it for no reason. Among the Schuler kids' fond memories include trips to their grandparents' farms and walking in Dubuque to see movies like Star Wars. We would walk all the way from Key West to the Grand, Chad said. Mom would even pack a lunch. It was my parents' way of making things fun for us, even when things were tough financially. Chad and Brett both recalled how their dad would cash his paycheck every week and made sure he got a Susan B. Anthony silver dollar to give to their mom. Of course, she got the paycheck, too, Chad said, but it was a joke between them that they would get a silver dollar because she'd been good that week. And that does it for today's reading of the Dubuque Telegraph Herald for Tuesday, March 12, 2024, on IRIS, the Iowa Radio Reading Information Service for the Blind. You can access a recording of today's reading on the website, iowaradioreading.org, at any time. Thank you very much for listening.